Hey, Bill and Gunnan, welcome to Black Law Tribal Edition. Murumu and Ganyara here with you today. Yirrilim is still out of the territory, and Bumi is doing his chief ministerial duties, but he might pop in later on. We'll wait and see. But Gaibara Galanunda, may God's peace be upon you wherever you are listening to this program. Thanks to our friends at Bumabipra Media 98.7 FM. If you're listening to this in Australia, it's probably via the National Indigenous Radio Service. And a big thanks to all the mobs that allow us to use your spectrum to share this information that we're doing today. I think what we're going to be, talking about is free prior and informed consent. And this is a really big one in terms of, entering into contracts and full disclosure to everything. Ganyara, there's a couple of articles here that I wanted to share with you. One of them is, I think it's from Al Jazeera, that the Kenyan authorities have formally acknowledged the court's decision to return ancestral forest lands to a group of people over there. I think they call the Ojiek people. I could be actually massacring that name. I do apologise if it's wrong. After years of litigation and delay, the decision follows a 2017 ruling by the African Court on Human and People's Rights, which found Kenya had violated their rights by evicting them from the Mau Forest without consent. Kenyan authorities have formally acknowledged that now, and there's a committee to oversee the land restitution and community involvement in forest conservation. This is a major victory for Indigenous self-determination, it's claimed here, in a continent where recognition of traditional land tenure remains inconsistent. So I'm wondering, if it remains inconsistent, then how does one remedy that situation, whether it's in Kenya or any other land or space on this planet where there's an Indigenous nation? How can they do that by using UNDRIP, for example, as a guide track?
Well, as soon as you said that, UNDRIP sprung to mind, because whatever they're doing there just resembles all the articles of UNDRIP, the UN Declaration of Rights for Indigenous People. When you read UNDRIP, free prior informed consent is all the way through it. Now, you've got to enter into contract freely. It's got to be before the contract is signed. You've got to have full understanding of the terms and conditions of the contract. And, you've got to agree to the contract. Now, when the colonial world moved in, which is what Resolution 1514 and 1916, the General Assembly Resolution from the UN, said that we've got to decolonise the world. It's got to all go back to where it belongs. And, yes, Africa was colonised by the British, by the French, by the Germans, by the Dutch, you name it. They've been there, Portuguese. It's all been in there. And they're all starting to move back out because they obtained the land without free, prior and informed consent. They just moved in and took it and said, oh, well, these people are just no better than monkeys. We can take their land because we don't consider them – we consider them savages, not civilised, which is rather bizarre because the civilised world is the most unruly, most, damaging. Yeah, it was more than barbarism. It was stupid what happened, and it happened here in Australia too. So free, prior and informed consent is critical for anyone to have standing. Now, recently Australia came out basically saying we don't have the free, prior and informed consent to be here, which raises the question, did the people over there in Kenya, those original tribes, did they lose their land or were they removed from their land legally by entering into the UN world, just like in Australia here? It's all about standing and capacity. Now, over there, it was normally at the point of a gun. Kind of reminds you of here where the settlers moved in and just shot people and stole the land, and whoever was left was removed and put into missions and open-air prisons, or concentration camps to get them away from the good resources. It's just what happened here. So UNDRIP is playing a critical role globally, not only in Australia. But you've got to remember it's all about standing and capacity. To enter into a contract, what capacity are you? Do you have plenipotentiary power for your original Aboriginal nation to enter into a deal with Kenya, for example, the Kenyan government?
Yeah, I know that there are many different tribes there. We've had some people from that area of part of the world, that is. I've met with them in the last few years and talked about that. And they do use the Kenyan identity, the state identity. But when we discussed the potential for tribal groups to create their own, they were quite surprised by that because they had assumed, or maybe they didn't know. I'm too sure. I can't even say that to be fair. But maybe they thought that all the tribes agreed to create Kenya, the state itself. But if that was the case, then why aren't Indigenous people at the forefront of decision making? Why is the state overrunning their lands or making decisions for and on behalf of them without actually probably considering that, or maybe, I don't know, even just steamrolling some of these things because of external influences? We just don't know. So I think that's an important one, where there must be true representation of the tribes. It has to be, one, legal clarity. Who are you? Who are you not? And how are you acting right now?
Well, let's have a look at the map of Africa. We can have a look at the map of... A good one is, for example, Papua New Guinea and West Papua. It's basically a straight line cutting the island in two. Now, I will definitely say this, that the original tribal people didn't have straight lines like that, like cutting it in two. That was a creation of the Europeans. We'll just draw a mark on a map, and this is where Indonesia is, and this is where Papua New Guinea is. You know, this is... Look at this line. But they weren't tribal positions. So in Kenya, it'll be exactly the same. In that area, the tribal boundaries won't be the necessarily matching the Kenyan border. Australia is a good example of that. You know, we're down in Yorta Yorta country in 2018. Now, you've got Victoria on one side of the Murray, New South Wales on the other. But hang on a sec. Yorta Yorta span the Murray. They're on the top side and the bottom side. So the border doesn't represent the Yorta Yorta nation. You see, so this is the important part. Our straight line is not what the tribe's done. The straight line is what the Europeans done, the settlers done, the colonial world had done, to agree that this part here is British and this part is African, or this part is German and this part is Spanish. So these lines were marked out by the European, by the settlers. It doesn't reflect what the tribal people had on the ground originally when they were settled upon by the Europeans when the colonial world moved in. So you can't say that the tribal people of Kenya are constrained within the Kenyan border, because they might overlap to the neighbouring UN member states. And if they're seen through the UN member state identity, then how are they capable to be representing their original nation? Because it says in UNDRIP Article 5, you've got every right to participate in the life of the state if you so choose, but you can bring back all your institutions, your government, your police, your whatever, and your Birth, Death and Marriages Act to say this is that man there or that woman there is seen through this legal identity created by the institutions of the government that may not want to take part, may choose to not take part in the life of their Kenyan nation.
Yeah, I think, you know, the way that we see it is certainly is you're either holding an ID of the World Club, the Club of the World, which is UN, so that might be an Australian ID, a Kiwi one or whatever it may be, or you hold a Yidinji one for this. You know, that's different. They're two different things. Holding the Yidinji ID is the legal entity or persona of the Yidinji nation. It's the voice for any legal, announcements, public notices, some sort of, you know, international representation. But you're either holding that, which we do right now, or you hold a world one. That's the UN stuff. And the UN ones are quite useful, the Australian ID. There's lots of obligations and benefits and whatnot. But the world agreed that Yidinji could create its own. The world agreed that Yidinji could create its own government, its own government departments, its own police. These may be described in the other world as aspirational documents. That's not our problem because the sovereignty here precedes any of their murmurings or chatter in that world.
What is most important, and people don't understand this, including the majority of tribal people here, they're like the Yidinji people, is that it was the tribe that decided to do what it's doing. It's the elders of the tribe going back many years, going back well before a lot of people got involved in this. It was them then that decided Yidinji is doing its thing. It's not going to wait for Australia to say you can do it. No, Yidinji said, we're going to do it. And that's why when we were travelling around the greater nation, the Yidinji nation, we spent years doing this, travelling around, getting people to try and understand this, to become part of it. And you'll find that there's a number of determinations signed off on by those elders that wanted to do this, that could understand it, and they actually said, okay, we're going to move forward. We're not going to stay inside Australia. We can't, because we were left out of Australia. So we're asserting our sovereignty. This is well before it became entrenched in Australia, the language, you know, the Uluru statement, the voice stuff, all this. This is going well before any of that stuff even was thought about. So Yidinji said, no, we don't need Australia's consent. What we need is our agreement amongst our elders to go forward and do this. Now, those people who didn't take part, well and good that they want to stay in Australia, we didn't mind. We said, you can stay in Australia all you like, but the Yidinji nation and its government was coming back. It was going to be reformed. And so no one from within Australia could stop us from doing that, just like any Australian citizen cannot take it away from us. The only way we can lose our governing ability is for all our nation to disappear and go and become Australians and go back into Australia again. That's why I said about in Kenya, if they're being seen as Kenyan citizens and they don't have the proper capacity to talk for their nation is finished. That group of people, that tribal nation, will be finished unless they revitalise themselves and come back in their true and correct capacity and standing.
Yeah, I'm not saying that this is what Kenya has done, for example. I don't know too much about it apart from this story. It's a good talking matter, you know. But, you know, in Australia, maybe they allow certain cases to win and a lot of cases not to win. So they could be quite selective, giving an illusion of, yes, you can win in our courts. You know, that would be sad if that's the case, if it is manufactured or engineered that way. But you can't deny the reality about capacity. The court has to be Yidinji court. The court has to be this. It can't be a foreign one unless the Yidinji nation is involved with something, and we say, well, we delegate that to an independent, competent court. It could be from a tribal nation on this continent or elsewhere.
Let's have a look at native title in Australia. Let's have a look at them determinations. Every determination that I've read, looked at, said, you know, those where there's shared use of land, you can only go and camp there. If you're an Aboriginal, you know, from that area and you've got this right to this is your country, but you've got to camp there. You can't camp, you can't live there permanently. You can't go and put buildings up without council approval or government approval. You can't go and do stuff without the government. What did you really get? And then I looked at Aboriginal freehold titles. You look at what they get. You know, they can get their land back as long as they don't use it for commercial gain inside Australia, because the minute you do and you're going to go and get some commercial gain off your land under Aboriginal freehold, yeah, you know, all of a sudden you've got to pay all the council rates and all the government taxes. You're still in there. You don't have the sovereignty to apply to your country, because sovereignty means there's no other law higher above you to prevent you from doing whatever you're doing. So if you have true sovereignty, you won't be using the Australian identity. You won't be saying, oh, this native title, give me the right to camp in our country for 2 days or 3 days or 4 weeks at a time. We got the right to do with our country whatever we see fit if you're under true sovereignty. And this is what Yidinji realised many, many years ago, long before all the native troopers, I like to call them, tried to pull Yidinji down. You know, there's always this it's going to be there to try and stop us doing what we're doing. They can't prevent us legally doing what we're doing. We were told in no uncertain terms over the last few years, Yidinji is right doing what it's doing, forming its government. And it was founded on the consent and agreement, unanimous agreement, of all the elders that took part in those meetings. And they're all, by the way, we got all those documents signed off on by those elders. You know, this is what we're going to do and this is the reason we're doing it. It's all signed off. It was done properly. There's even video footage of it taking place, of Parliament being formed, of government being formed, of everyone signing the documents. So it's all there, both you can see it for your own eyes by the people that really matter. And yes, Yidinji's back. So no matter what capacity you are inside Australia, you cannot prevent the Yidinji nation and its government doing what it's doing. We've got every right to do it, and Australia know that. When they come up to us and say, yep, you just can do whatever you've got to do, and when the Federal Attorney General said, or representative of the Federal Attorney General said to us in 23, you can do a deal with China if you think so. You know, if you want to do it, you can. We can't stop you. Why is that? Because our sovereignty is now being asserted properly, not as Australian, not through the Australian identity, but through the Yidinji identity that's created pursuant to the institutions of the Yidinji nation, the one that was here before the colonial world come, and the one that's going to be here when, as they fully decolonise. And the only way we can decolonize properly is Australia get consent to be here, and we've got to have all our members have got to be fully informed before they agree to any consent. That's the challenging part. So how do you tell Yidinji citizens or Yidinji people of Yidinji status that this is you have a right to go back over there and be seen legally through the Yidinji identity? You can be seen through the Australian one, but you can't be seen through both at the one time. You're either Yidinji or you're Australian right now, and you've got the two. You can choose at an instant what world you're going to be in. You can be in Yidinji, then you can be Australian. You can flip-flop back in now, but you can't be both at the one time. This is so important. Free, prior, informed consent. Now, are they going to force you to be seen through an Australian identity? Yes or no? So it's not free. If they're going to force you to do anything, it's not free, let alone prior. Are they going to tell you before they do it? Did they tell the Yidinji people that, we're going to take all your country? No, they didn't. Did they inform why? No, they didn't. Did the Yidinji people consent? No, they didn't, because this is why we're being told now. We're right. We're correct in what we're doing. At law, legally, international law, local law, domestic law, Australia cannot prove its case as to how it's got its law here.
And more importantly, tribal law. The tribal law that we're passionately defending here today and every day. These are the things that are important. It's not about money, it's not about fame, or it's not about this, that and the other, or getting cheap thrills. It's actually about defending what the true design of, of the nation and the fabric and everything else that goes with it. This isn't about, making it hard for people. The law is there to protect. The law is there to provide. And these are the things that we have to go back to, because this other world that came here has caused so much of a ruckus, let's say, that it is now time for the Yidinji Nation to stand up.
Well, the important part is, at the time going back, when this was decided to go ahead the way it was, a lot of those laws were written down and agreed to. They were signed off on by the elders, by the relevant elders, not some make-believe elder, not someone who's claiming to be something. You got to understand the important part of those who can speak for country and those who can't speak for country. Just because you're connected doesn't mean you can speak for country. There's no way in the world that law will stand. Oh, I'm connected, I must be the boss of the land. There's no way you got a proper connection to land to speak for country. And that was determined back then, just like all the other laws that are associated with this ability to speak for country. That's why I'm saying, we talk about Kenya, they will have specific rules and regulations that will limit who can do the treaty or take or receive the country back, or did they abandon their country. So this is that what I'm saying here globally. These rules, there are specific rules that will apply to everyone, everywhere, everything, So our lot have certain rules and the neighbouring lot have certain rules that must be adhered to. If they don't adhere to them, their nation is finished. It's over and done with. If you don't adhere to the rules of Australia, for example, as an Australian citizen, Australia's finished. We're starting to see this around the world now, where there's some lot of global, I wouldn't say insurrection, but there's a lot of global unrest out there where people don't want to adhere to the rules, the constitutional rules of a nation. And we can't have that here as a tribal nation ourselves. So we're applying what the tribe had said back then to carry forward until now, until that changed properly and formally. If we don't like the capital punishment laws, that has to be changed by the tribe itself, by the agreement of the elders, and why it should be changed and this sort of stuff. It's very important. But you've got to get informed consent from those elders as to why capital punishment should be done away with. It's not just some game. There's reasons why they had capital punishment or corporal punishment. If there was treason against someone wanting to take the nation for itself, I'm the boss of this nation now. There's laws against that. Unless he can prove why, the laws will apply, and this is where capital and corporal punishment come in. So we've got to be very careful as to where we want to play. So to get informed consent, the people must understand that part of the tribe through an identity that's not of Kenya or Australia or whatever it is.
Yeah, and it comes back to what I said earlier, is that the law is there to protect people. It's there to for peace, for order and good governance. So whether you're talking about environmental stewardship or wet season law, dry season law and this, that and the other, marriage, whatever it is, adoption, the law is there for the peace of the Yidinji Nation. that is what this government is about protecting, because foreign powers have tried to disrupt that on purpose, unintended. It doesn't bother me. What is the priority now is to protect that for generations to come.
Law's a double-edged sword, isn't it? You get all this good fun stuff, yet you get obligation. You get obligation to abide by the law. You know, this is where the sovereign citizen movement, they don't agree with law. They want to have all the good fun stuff, but they don't want to have the obligation of defending the territory properly. They don't want to have the obligation of protecting the resources, for example. You know, a sovereign citizen will say, I want to go and dig all the minerals out for me, and I want to be able to do this is all my right to do it. Well, if you get that right, you must have an obligation to defend the territory. Oh, no, we're a sovereign citizen. And that's what we're saying. Yidinji is not a sovereign citizen movement. It doesn't have... And look, sovereign citizen movements come in all race, colours and creeds. It's irrelevant. You either support the law in total or you don't be subject to the law by not taking part in Yidinji, for example. Don't take part in our world and claim to be Yidinji if you don't want to have the obligation of what laws are there, you know, protection of the environment, for example. If you don't want to protect the environment, you want to rape, pillage and plunder, you're not abiding by your old tribal laws. Well, you're not really a citizen of it, are you? You just want to have all the benefit but no obligation. That's not how law works. You've got to have obligation to get a benefit. So law is a double-edged sword. Don't matter where it is, here, Kenya, overseas, it's all the same the world over.
You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today. Thanks to our friends at Bumper Pippa Media, 98.7 FM. We'll be back after the break. Hey, welcome back to the show. The Foreign Affairs Minister for the Waka Waka Nation, Du Dunham, was recently in town here on the Yidinji Territory to discuss some exciting news about a Waka Waka Yidinji Treaty. I spoke with him in a pre-recorded interview, and it is very much a conversation. We did not expect to... we weren't doing it in a broadcast fashion, but it gives you an idea of how we are actually trying to formalise relationships with the Waka Waka Nation and many other nations. The Yidinji model is fast becoming something that is being used or built on for other nations. Not that we're better than anyone, it's just that you know, we started doing this and we wanted to share that information. But enjoy the conversation. Thank you, Minister, for visiting. And obviously, this is an exciting time for both our nations.
I'd just like to say thank you for Yidinji for inviting me here, and appreciate the opportunities that we have to work together. And just like I come forth from the elders of Waka Waka, because it's probably the important part where we're working together and building our presence together.
Yeah, I think it's really important that we acknowledge them as the leaders at every official capacity that we have. I'm just thinking about the business list today. Minister, I think, is it possible that we move forward with looking at some sort of treaty document, if that's possible? I think if the nation that you represent is keen to have IFACE as the official signing of the Waka Nation, Waka Waka and Yidinji Treaty, would that be enough time if we send a draft document to you with you today for mid-August? Is that something that's
that doable? Would be actually fantastic. The elders and ministers of Waka Waka are excited about the treaty and would love to have the opportunity to go forward. And as enough time, I think August is probably the perfect opportunity.
Well, we do have existing ones. Obviously, we allow people in terms of the other party to review it and to make amendments and whatnot. So
wonderful.
I think if we can agree in principle to send you the existing document and those foundational principles, I might just quickly go through if that's all right.
Absolutely.
And just off the top of our heads, talking about first and foremost, mutual recognition of each other's sovereignty. So
yes,
that the Yidinji Nation would recognise the Waka Waka Nation's sovereignty, because being a pre-1770 tribal continuous society,
yes,
and as a nation, and now having a let's say a legal personality,
yes,
as its international voice for the rest of the world,
yes, and now Waka Waka would do the same exactly in respecting the wishes in the documents legally with Yidinji as well.
Okay, so that's something we can agree on now to keep in the document. The other thing too is any potential trade or agreements, bilateral agreements coming out would be what they call FPIC compliant,
yes,
free prior informed,
yes,
consent,
yep,
compliant.
Absolutely.
You happy with that,
yep,
as well?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Imperative.
Yep. All right. The other ones that I wanted to mention were the Peace and Non-Aggression Pact. So our nations commit to peaceful relations, universal peace, perpetual, yes, amity between nations. There may be times where relations can be strained or tested. That happens in everywhere. I think coming up with some mechanisms to deal with any of that potential in the future, yes, you know, we have to allow for those things just in case they do come. And we can be prepared for it. So, but initially, obviously, we want a peaceful and absolutely non-aggression compact.
Good relations come from not having issues. Good relations come from building when we have issues and working with our communications together to work those things out.
Mm.
So we would 100% agree.
Could you briefly? I know I don't want to put you on the spot.
Yep.
You don't have to answer if you don't want to, but could you briefly explain the north, south, east, and western borders of the Waka Waka Nation.
Yes. Down to the lower end of the Waka Waka Nation, to the south, is the most bottom form is Bunya Mountains and Yarraman. I had to say that correctly. It's slightly a little bit different than the pronunciation, but you'll understand that. And to the north, the highest point we have is the Monto direction. There's, on both those ends, there's some mutual grounds with both sides, and that's part of Waka Waka. That's the important part. We like to bridge gaps. That's what we do. It's part of what we do. Across towards the western side is some of the – now our boundaries out on the sides go not just directly down flat or anything. They have ins and outs, so but not subject to places like Eidsvold out on one side. And on the other side, just closely bordered along the Kabi Kabi direction, we have, you know – just on the insides of Gympie is Kilkeven, and down the same in and out on that border as well. So, but they're probably the four closest borders that we have.
Oh, thank you for that, because it's important. The reason why I'm pretty sure we have received a map from your office,
yes.
Specifically detailing the geographical area you just explained. The reason why we do that, I think, is because of jurisdictional and territory. We want to respect that, make sure that we're not encroaching on someone else's tribal territory, or that we may be causing offences in yours. So we want to acknowledge those boundaries. But not only that, I think the treaty would look at, from our point of view and yours, looking at each other's borders and potentially looking at movement between those.
Yep.
The standard issue that we have allows for 90 days without a visa, for example.
Yes, yes.
But, I mean, those things, you can extend them. You can, I mean, so much movement around these days.
Yes.
But I think it's important that we have those.
So one of the other points up at the higher end in the north direction is Bam Bam Springs. So Bam Bam Springs has the same. It's funny because down in the direction of Bunya Mountains, it was a gathering place, and they used to gather together and all of the surrounding tribes around those areas used to gather there and all used to meet to work out things like the treaties and how they work together, which is wonderful. And then we go to the north and we end up in Bam Bam Springs, and what do you know, exactly the same thing at the top. And how good is that? This is where I think part of our culture is, that we're accepting and work together, and that's how partially in, you'll see in some of our coat of arms and flags and stuff, we've got the Bunya Mountains, and we also have the Rainbow Serpent as well for those reasons. So
yeah. Thank you for that, because it's it's very exciting. And I know you mentioned the Kabi Kabi Nation there.
Yes.
Also, and it's going to be exciting to have them on board. I understand you already have a treaty with the Kabi.
Yes.
Kabi, and that's fantastic.
Yeah.
I've had the pleasure and the honour of travelling to Kabi Kabi territory earlier this year, and really looking forward to their contribution at IFACE.
Yes.
As well. The other thing that now that we have a jurisdiction and the map part covered in terms of our pre-discussion to the offer of a treaty, the other thing is that maybe looking at, obviously recognition has already begun in terms of diplomatic status.
Yes.
Obviously, we've acknowledged that you have a foreign office and you're the foreign minister.
Correct.
But I'm thinking within our document there, it talks about potential to and agreeing to establish diplomatic missions on either on those territories. So
yes.
Is that something you're happy with as well?
Absolutely, yes. We'd love to work with organisations, as an example, like Syversen. It's in our ministry often where we're working with the Syversen products, which is the Yindinji product, and they stand for all what happens there. They're getting a good gist of what's going on with it now, and there's a number of people using it as an example of one area that we can work together, but multiple others I think in the future will be exciting.
Yeah, and it's really it'll be really powerful to have that legal framework in form of a treaty to make that a lot smoother and easier and ironing out potential bugs. Obviously, starting a nation from scratch is a lot of work. So we've got a few things to do there. The other thing I was really keen to explore was the not only nation-to-nation government relations but also maybe tribal council introductions to elders, to each other's elders and things like that. I think that's a very important thing. Obviously, that's the true power of a nation.
Yes.
We'd certainly want to have some sort of formal relationship with Jarnala Nyirinji, which is our tribal council of elders.
Yes.
The seal of Jarnala Nyirinji goes on every correspondence we send out.
Yes.
So it's giving honour to them. But I would say that's something we should include. Obviously, in the language of the treaty, for all intents and purposes, should be in English for now because everyone can comprehend that.
Yes.
I wanted to talk to you. You mentioned trade there, but maybe shared economic zones. What are your ideas or suggestions around that, you think?
Well, I think if you're having a treaty, that's important that we work together, and that meaning that both our areas have similar trades together. Certainly think that there's potential that in and out ramps, both working with the finances together, so that if you're in one area, you can spend, and in the other area, you can spend the same, which would be fortuitous to both sovereign nations.
May I ask, put you on the spot again, Minister, but
yes.
What ideas do you have for the name of the currency at the moment?
We're looking at the Waka Waka token. That's the exciting part. We're actually in the process of that at the moment, and that was the name brought up firstly, and I think it does say it could be a waka. Waka waka, it's easy to say.
Yeah. And in terms of your actual legal tender as opposed to the token, is there another name or different, like with SID, for example, the Sovereign Unity Dollar, would there be another thing? For us, our token is called the Allodial Unity Digital Dollar.
Yes.
Is there something that you would call the legal tender of the Waka Waka Nation, or is that still up for conversation?
It's still up at the moment, but the Waka Waka is what they're looking at. We're currently looking at three or four organisations, gold backing. We're looking at Metamui as well, and obviously functioning through the Cyberzone network. So, but these things are in actual discussion right now. Mm. They're on the table. We've sorted through a few other areas like coat of arms and seals and flags. We're looking at number plates and, all those things at this present time. But we've got through a number of our objectives. Constitution obviously was the first one, but now we're looking at the actual finance and digital. Is it a digital coin? How does that work? Who does that link up with? How do you pay in and how do you then pay out, depending on who you're working with at that time? But we feel the most fluid of the organisations we're going to be able to operate with are going to be places, Yindinji, Berrigubba, Kabi Kabi, as an example.
Mm. One of the things we mentioned before was trade and looking at how we can maximise that in a treaty. The other thing too is I mentioned that if there was any dispute or there should be a place for resolution.
Yes.
And I think in the treaty document that we would offer, there is that space.
Yes.
For remedy between nations. In terms of the jurisdiction, it may be a herd in a different nation, for example, that is, independent of either party. They're things that we can talk
about
in the future. But I think that's a good start to have some sort of, not only that, but consumer protection. It can cross many different gamuts of anything that may come out of any, whether it's intended or not, some sort of a dispute. So I think that one of the questions we usually get is let's say, a Waka Waka national fell in love with a Yidinji national, had children, how would we, if that was to separate, you know, what jurisdiction would take precedence in terms of, they're the things that we'd love to just talk about, maybe, yes. Private,
yep.
Post iFace or whatnot. So that they're real issues that may arise. Obviously, we're all human beings. We have emotions and yes. We make decisions that can impact others. So I think minimising any potential fallout, whether it's through trade or, yes. relationships or whatnot, there should be that dispute mechanism there for to keep the peace and keep the nations on track. So that's part of the treaty. But in terms of the nitty-gritty, I think that's something obviously down the track that we yes. can work on yeah, together.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think part of most issues come from festering and not solving issues, and I think it's important to get issues. Everyone needs a time to, first of all, digest and bring stuff in to say, hey, we've got an issue here. But we can't let things draw out. It's about having a process in place, putting that process forward, having that dealt with in the potentially out of the jurisdictions is a great idea, and being able to then have, someone be able to go, hey, bang, talk, and then things get worked out. It's the communication that will solve the issues.
Yeah, the other thing that I was just thinking off the top of my head was also, I know that you've, the Waka Waka Nation has been present at both our National Day celebrations in recent yes. years, and I think that's an important acknowledgement of each other's sovereignty or yes. a significant milestone. So that would be one of the things that we would commit to is coming down to your part of the world.
Yes.
And acknowledging that as well. There's also environmental stewardship agreements included in the treaty.
Yes.
It's basically something that's always been there about not
yep.
knocking off country too quick and killing it with pesticides or all this kind of stuff. So that's pretty important for us.
Do windmills count?
That's up to you. We would support your sovereignty or your position on that.
There will be a position on.
There won't be any Yidinji windmills there. Put it that way.
Yes, yes. I'm just letting you know there will be a few discussions for other places about what they're doing in Waka Waka country, in those areas, Cherbourg as well. There's other issues there, but great to hear the interpretations of how we can work together to assist you in your matters. For Yindinji, and in reverse, listen to council on other issues about what direction we can assist. Obviously, there are decisions on our things we need to serve our people, and if we need to serve our people, that's more important. But seeking outside thoughts and what you would say, impressions, to be able to, for us, move forward on our issues and deal with them in a manner that is productive to all of our, not just our community, basically, our community. The elders having the foresight of the past with all the connection is an important part in that. And the more organisations that work together, the better the outcome is always.
Mm.
We can't be an island and left alone. We need brotherhood and sisterhood.
Absolutely. In terms of if we're aiming for iFace for the official signing of the treaty.
That would be wonderful.
Yep. In terms of the formalisation, we in past we've with Birigaba and the Githabal and Narkabal Yukum Yukum.
Yep.
We had our current Chief Minister, Bumigi Mwibara, attend
yes.
those
yes.
and sign treaty documents. We would certainly, not only Foreign Minister to Foreign Minister would like yes. to sign it, but yes. also if Nuruku or another elder could be present, we would find that very, very pleasing.
I notice that last IFAS, we had five ministers there and they were all excited. The only reason Niriku wasn't there was a hospital issue. He's ensured that this year he is excited to come to this year's IFAS and he won't miss it for the world.
And that was Duke Dunham, the Foreign Affairs Minister for the Waka Waka Nation. You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet. We hope you're enjoying the show, and we'll be back after the break for some final comments.
Hello, my name is Andrew, and I'm from Arnhem Land. My band is called Andrew Guru Band, and you're listening to BBM 98.7.
Ganyara, we're talking about FPIC before. We're talking about treaties, nation-to-nation treaties. Really important that Indigenous nations look at self-governance, not necessarily as a way of getting back or getting out of things, but really about solidifying their position in history for future generations to come.
Look, we never went away. The Yidinji Nation was never exterminated. It never went away. What happened? Most people just lost touch with it. They lost touch with the laws, with the relevant decisions, the decision-making capability. So it was just one of those, because the settlers had just rounded up all the Yidinji people and just jammed them wherever they saw fit. They didn't get free, prior, informed consent to get here. It's a very hard one for Australia to get around, free, prior, informed consent, because they supported the United Nations Declaration of Rights for Indigenous People. It's mentioned all the way through, before you do anything, free, prior, informed consent. It's got to be done freely. It's got to be done, you know, properly. You've got to tell people this is what's going on. Oh, you're too busy being an Australian. You can't talk for and on behalf of your nation. You know, that's the sort of stuff they've got to tell the Aboriginal people. You can't, because you're being seen through the Australian identity. If you're seen in the court for native title determination, for example, as John Smith, you can't be, that identity can't be the one that represents your Indigenous nation, you know. So you've got to create the institutions that create it all, you know. So they've got to inform you. It's got to be done prior to you doing anything. And then the nation must agree.
Yeah, and that was clearly conveyed with the Eddie Mabo High Court challenge. He couldn't go in there as Koiki, for example. He could only go into an Australian realm using an Australian identity, and that was Mr. Edward Mabo, which is created subject to a Births, Deaths and Marriages Act of Queensland, I would assume. But, you know, he went in there to prove a point. But... you know, and the Australian courts could go only so far, because they couldn't really talk to Koiki, because it would, you know, fracture the skeleton of the legal system or whatever they said at the time. But that's where it doesn't stop us from doing that, building our nations and actually asserting sovereignty.
100%. If they would have went too far with the Mabo case, they would have destroyed Australia's legal standing to be here, which is what they did. They actually said, no, Australia wasn't terra nullius. There were people here and they had systems of law that we can now recognise. We recognised them back then, but we chose not to see them. What's going on at present, and this is the hard part for Aboriginal people to understand, they know their laws are there, but Australia is refusing to see them. Australia is refusing to legally recognise their systems of law. That's the hard part. That doesn't mean your law is going away. What it means is you've got to revitalise your law and start to move forward to assert your sovereignty under the laws and regulations and protocols and customs that were there before the white fellas come, before the Europeans turned up. So you've got to bring them to life again. And it's hard to do it as an Australian, because as an Australian identity, the Australian identity has no right to go back into that legal world. This is all in the make-believe world, in the world of legal fiction. The whole lot is. You know, we're humans, just like kangaroos and wallabies and bandicoots. We're born, we live, we die. We have the choice to go and take part in our tribal nation, our law that's always been here, or we got the right to go and just participate in Australia, for example, and get great benefit. You get Medicare and you get Centrelink and you get to use cash and you can go and buy a car that Australia will defend, and they can raise a standing army and they can conscript you into the army to get killed. You can do a lot of fantastic stuff, you know, which is really cool. But you've got to come back to understand that it's your law that's here, that's always been here for you, that hasn't been extinguished, and to participate in that law, you've got to use an identity created by your system, and it can't be recognised in their court until there's a formal agreement or a treaty. So until that happens, you can't be Johnny Smith being seen in both worlds. You know, Johnny Smith is the Australian identity, birth, death, and marriages says so, and we can see their systems where Johnny Smith, the human of Johnny Smith, can go and participate if he so chooses. That's the important part. Read Article 5. You can, but you've got to choose to want to do so, and that's the hard part.
It is the hard part, and people can get stung in court. You know, you see people all the time trying to, argue or whatever it is, and it just falls apart pretty rotten. But anyway, it's all about capacity and standing, and tribal law is the ultimate in terms of here for the Yidinji territory. Obviously, that comes from the Creator, God. And speaking of which, Gaibaragalanundu, may God's peace be upon you, wherever you are listening to the show. We'll catch you next week, and hope you're doing well. We're going to head off now. Okay, coming.
Trying to live with me a hoodlum. Trying to say I got no good blood in my veins. What they know about me? What they know about me? I'ma say I'm a good man. My melanin's got you feeling some kind of way.
I guess my color and my lingo equivalent to a pistol. Yeah, can't even shop at the mall. Stigma's got my people not shopping at all. We start emerging, then emergency call. The feds are pressed, what's the urgency for? Shopping centers we cannot enter. An open letter for society's sake. Innocent people that society break. If it's required, then they hiding the tape. Roles reverse, ain't waste time, they providing a name. It's a goddamn shame. Treated like aliens, people of power equal fake aliens. Justice system is failing us, FML to Australia. The news done, got us screwed. They feed you lies, you call it true. I win, you lose, no need for proof. At 3% of Australia, what's the ultimate failure? Everything that I said is exactly what they gon' say to you. I told you the truth, hurt. It's my color and my lingo equivalent to a pistol.
Tryna live with me a hood now. Tryna say I got no good blood in my veins.
I see my fair share of unfair look at what you done here.
I'ma say I'm a good man.